Hello and welcome to The Cynic Weekly. I'm your host for this week. I'm Christopher Gallagher. I'm back in the hot seat after quite a while out. Don't often host the weekly, but Louis McCaffrey has given me the honour of sitting in this week. I have a panel of stellar contributors, you know, the lifeblood of The Cynic. Let's start with Louis McCaffrey. Hello, Louis. How are you?
I'm good, Christopher. Thank you very much for taking over hosting duties. It's I just kind of fancied, you know, having an old-fashioned Cynic podcast on a Tuesday where I just came on and say that everybody's shite. You don't really get a chance to do that as host, so but I fancied a wee break.
Terrific stuff, but the point is you've got me to ring you back in. That's the beauty of it.
Yeah,
I'm the safety net. I'm your safety net. Don't you worry about that. Louis looking terrific. He's munching down on some crisps, as he always does. It's a McCoy's bland. It's a Mucho's. It's nacho cheese. Not your cheese. A plain words pun. We're off to a bad start. So we're back in the game. Keith McGinty looking like a 1942 RAF pilot. Hello, Keith, how are you?
Hi, Christopher, I'm good. Are you well yourself?
I'm not too bad, thank you. Thank you, Keith, asking me how I'm doing. It's good. You're looking terrific, Keith. How's things? How are you? What's happening?
The legs are a wee bit sore. We had our first game of the Cynic 5s last night. It was meant to be Cynic 6s, but ended up 5v4 last night. But I feeling a wee bit old this morning. I don't know, Louis was playing as well. How are you feeling today, Lou Dog?
I'm a fucking mess, to be honest with you, mate. I honestly woke up this morning and considered going to hospital because I thought I needed crutches. Listen, what did I expect? I hadn't played football in years, and I've suddenly brought my body out of the cold and expected it to do things. It went pretty awful. But it was great to see people. Great to see people, especially H from Stepsell and a few others. So I enjoyed it.
Great stuff. Get involved. Graham Mackay, all the way from Bamberg in Germany. You're looking terrific, Graham. How the hell are you?
Thank you. I'm good. I mean, I'm a bit upset I wasn't invited to the fives. Maybe we can have it over here next time. You can do a bit of travelling. Wayleg. And it's good to be with Keith again. I think the last time I was on a podcast with Keith was Norm McAlger reaction, maybe.
Oh, it would have been, yeah.
It was a long time ago.
God,
was it that bad? Aye. Aye. I've been on a reaction since.
I remember someone on Twitter said that Cynic had got their B team out for that reaction.
How true they were.
Hey, listen, it's all about giving people opportunities and... That's what we're all about, The Cynic. I just want to highlight something we don't necessarily do quite a lot, but and we don't do it purposefully, but we have our Celtic Cynic subscription service at thecynic.co. If you go to thecynic.co, it's a website. There's lots of free stuff on it, lots of free feature podcasts, The Cynic Weekly, you can get that every week if you like. There's press conferences, there's the Celtic Women's Football Show, which records every week, lots of free episodes of that. Essentially, what you can do is you can sign up to The Cynic. You can sign up, if you want to sign up for 1 month and then cancel because it's not up your, you know, right, not up your street, fair enough, but you can sign up, have a listen. We've got podcasts every single day. We've got written articles. We've got match previews. We've got lots of stuff happening. We've got live broadcasts. You can hear Louis, you can hear Keith, you can hear Graham on various different podcasts talking in different tones and different coverage. It's every day. You know, support the side, turn off Clyde. You know, like, let's, you know, if you want to have a go, get involved. Cynic.co, thecynic.co, at 90 Minutes Cynic, you can check out the links. We've got links there. But ultimately, we just cover Celtic and we cover it. We've got our point of view, we've got statistical point of view, we've got tactical point of view, we cover the women's team, we cover the B team, we cover it all. If you're interested, check out thecynic.co, get involved. But we're not here to promote our podcast, we're here to talk about the mighty Glasgow Celtic. Let's start with an opening question, because we're now in the situation where it's the 5th of October. Ange Postecoglou has been in the job for a couple of months. And I just want to get your perspective because we're going to talk about different games and we're going to talk about where we are at this point. But let's just start with the opening question. Are Celtic where you expected them to be at this stage in the season. So if you think about when, you know, obviously we had the Eddie Howe debacle, we had Ange coming in under a bit of a cloud, not necessarily his fault at all, but coming in under a bit of a cloud, galvanising the support, and then it's been a bit of a roller coaster. My point being, our Celtic, we expected them to be at this stage of the season. We'll start with Louis. What's your thoughts?
Probably. I think my expectations were pretty low going into the season, to be honest with you, just because of everything that had happened last season and the kind of mess we were in. I had a wee bit more hope, obviously, when Don McKay came in, and I thought we would have seen more off the pitch by now. So, yeah. You know, I didn't really expect us to be where we are now off the pitch. On the pitch, I think the turnaround was going to be, we all knew that the turnaround was going to be so huge. I didn't expect us to get everybody. But at the same time, you're going through the transfer window, everything's happened so slowly, and you come out of it and you're raging. But if you take a step back and think, look, did you really think we were going to have a top quality first team that was going to be, you know, challenging for the title, and you could be confident in that right away? And no, that probably wasn't going to happen. The one thing I didn't expect probably was for us to have dropped so many points. I think, like, Europe, I think, you know, we qualified for Europa League, great. Kind of expected, you know, expected and hoped for that at least. I think league-wise, though, I think the form has just not been clearly good enough, but it's not as if we're in a dire situation where the league is already gone. You know, the Rangers game at the weekend, you know, they were getting beat at one point. You suddenly look at that and you think, you know, it could be 3 points of a difference between us and them. It's turned out it's six, thanks to a referee, but it's a difficult one. I think in normal times, no, this wouldn't be expected or acceptable. But I think considering where we were, I think you can kind of say, right, okay, here we are. But my only trepidation with saying that is, am I confident that we are going to kick on now after this international break? No, I'm not. And that's my big worry, that this next run between now and even between now and Christmas is going to be the pivotal period, and it will determine where we finish, I think, probably. Am I confident in what's to come? Not 100%, to be honest with you, and that's the disappointment.
Me personally, I would be far more confident and far more, you know, if I'm to answer the question myself, If we'd beaten Dundee United, yeah, I think I'd be in a situation where, yeah, I think we probably are where I expected us to be. Did I expect Rangers to beat us in the first game of the season? Probably, just because it was at Ibrox and just because they have a team that know how to win at this point, and we're still finding ourselves. So, you know, at that point we would have been, what, 4 points behind? Yeah, that would have been fine. It's the Dundee United result that's kind of maybe really taken my focus away. Graham McKay, you've bought into Ange. You're a guy who thinks that if we feed him, he will, you know, deliver. What's your thoughts?
I mean, I think when you look at results and stuff like that, when you look at everything without taking context into consideration, then it doesn't look great, especially that Dundee United match. That is definitely the outlier, because we should be beating them at home. When you then look into it and see that we hit the woodwork three times, it's then a bit kind of like, come on, what do we need to do to score here? I think everyone accepted it was going to be a rebuild year, but no one really wanted it to be. And again, I think we've got to a situation where, yeah, a lot of Celtic fans are shown that they didn't actually expect it to be a rebuild year. I would say, and maybe you, Keith, and Gal, you can kind of think about this, but I would say that Ange's got the worst starting squad. So the worst squad that he's inherited since Tommy Burns. I don't think anyone's had a worse squad to kind of come into. And that's like even given Tommy Burns Paul McStay. So it's been a mental run of injury problems as well. I think we're so lucky that Kyogo has hit the ground running, because someone coming from Asia to the Scottish League, you would not be expecting him to be instantly the main man. And that is something that is just kind of blown me away a little bit. Stephen Russell, who works for a betting firm, and obviously betting firms have these kind of like, the Daily Record always calls it the fucking supercomputer, but they've got these kind of algorithms and stuff that kind of try and work out at this stage what they expect the league to go like. And I think at the start of the last international break, we were at 42% chance of winning the league. Now we're down to 33% chance of winning it. I think if you'd said to me at the start of the season, we've got a 33% chance of winning the league, despite the fact that we've lost three away games, I still think we're in a pretty decent position. Also, the context, again, I've just got some notes written down here about our away games so far. And that's one of the points you wanted to talk about, the kind of away day hoodoo. This season, we have probably gone to the four hardest away venues that we can go to in Scotland. I mean, you can maybe say Easter Road in there is one of them. But when it start, when you start your first game at Tynecastle, notoriously hard place for us to go, Rogers alone lost twice at Tynecastle in his 2.5 years. It was Andrew's first game. And if it wasn't for the fact that we don't have VAR in this country, Andy Halliday's off the park, red card, and we have a goal. Because we got a goal chopped off that shouldn't be there. It shouldn't have been chopped off. Ibrox, one of our most decent performances against them since Gerrard's come in, I would say. Even with the ones that we've won, like the cup final.
I don't know. I think in the second half we were terrible.
But I mean, from a kind of like overall point of view, when you look at the chances created, the chances given up, we were better than a lot of times we've played them over the last few attempts at Ibrox.
We played them very, very early. So aye. I think a lot of us were willing to give a let there. Sorry, Graham, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, it's just I think a lot of us were maybe expecting a pumping. It didn't happen. It wasn't as dominant from them as people maybe expected beforehand. Livingston, plastic pitch. They've only been back in the SPFL for 2.5 seasons. With that in mind, this next kind of stat is going to sound extreme, but we haven't won there since 2006. So that's not a game that we, in recent years, are expecting to go and win.
Come on.
I think, as I said, you can argue this, but I think we've gone to the first four SPFL away games are the four hardest they'll get in Scotland, as far as I'm concerned.
I actually think the next away game is probably going to be the hardest. But listen, I want to give Keith some time because you got your point over very well. Keith, your point on the question.
Yeah, I'm just agreeing with him there. I think if you look where the baseline was at the end of last season, the state of the squad, who had all left, the whole shit show that was the Eddie Howe, was he coming in, was he not, and then so quickly appointing Ange. The time that it was going to take for those 12 new players, some of them were still to see, for them to settle. I think I'd hoped for better, but maybe expected worse. Whenever we look at the state of the team and the idea and how Ange likes these teams to play, we knew it was going to take time. I like what Graham was saying there about the rebuilding year. I think we thought the rebuilding year was going to be on the coattails of Rangers, being a lot closer to them than where we currently are, which is six in the league. With 3 losses already. And those 2 losses away to Hearts and to Livy, I think it's fair for us to expect a Celtic team to go there and at the least draw. I know there's extenuating circumstances with the performance of the referees, but that's something that we've always had to deal with and we should be wise to. And if we've got that many good Celtic men in the boardroom and at the club, then they should be wise to that by now and be able to help and prepare for that sort of thing. For Europe, I'll be honest, I didn't expect us to do much in Europe. I was thinking Conference League. The fact that we've gotten a Europa League is good, but with such a rebuild, I was thinking we were going to need a Strachan's first season when he brought in Boric and Nakamura, and we didn't have Europe. We had that chance to work with them during the week, and he built a team that was ready for his second season. I think that's going to maybe go against us, especially when we've got such a huge prize at the end of the season, this 30-odd million that we get for the Champions League. So thinking about it, from where we were at the end of last season to where we are now, we're probably maybe a wee bit more advanced than where I'd really hoped for us to be. The reason for that is that there's glimmers in some of the play that we're doing. There's the chances where we're hitting the crossbar umpteen times against Dundee United, where we're playing really well and creating chances against Bayer Leverkusen and going over and dominating Betis for a short period in the game. There's those little glimmers.
Sorry.
We're hopeful.
Dominating who?
Betis?
The fuck is Betis? Betis?
Yeah, Betis.
It's best.
Fucking best. It's real best. It's the real best.
When we're going there, and there is signs that there's going to be change to the team. There's going to be recovery in this, but I think that's more hope at this moment in time. There's so many things that are going against them. Don McKay leaving, I thought there'd been massive changes at the club. Even like fan engagement. That's what we've got just now. It's not what we've been promised and not what's been talked about for the past 6 months.
Keith McGinty is, as the cynic.co, sign up now. We do a lot of stuff where for years we've had access to the press conferences, and you know, there's been a lot of made about it on social media in terms of, you know, there's other fan media outlets and, you know, who's got the equal opportunity. We should all have the equal opportunity. We've never said anything different.
Definitely.
And Keith is our guy. Keith is our guy who deals with all this. And Keith and myself kind of have meetings about what, you know, what's the kind of move forward. And as I say, Keith's been fantastic. But we've been promised a lot of stuff, Keith. And just like we were promised from a fan's point of view, we were promised restructure, we were promised lots of different things. As a fan media outlet, an independent media outlet, we've been promised various things and nothing seems to be appearing.
There is. The latest promise is that there's a grand plan soon to be revealed. But how many times have I said that to you?
Yeah, I know.
And
yeah.
I'm the eternal optimist, but even I'm starting to, my faith is shaking.
I mean, you know, we're called the cynic as well. So, you know, that's, but there's just a lot about the club just now that, you know, with Dom McKay and the place. Lou, you wanted to come in. Have you got a specific point you want to come in on?
I've got a couple, you guys are talking about, you know, the point about the Dundee United game being the kind of big disappointment and things like that. And then Graham touched on the Livingston game. It was the Livingston game for me that really disappointed me, because I thought we would get over the idea that we should be going and having difficulty away to Livingston. I just don't believe in it. I just can't accept that. And I know it's been years since we won there, but this was a team who hadn't won a game going into the game against us and haven't won a game since. I mean, since we played them, they've got beat off at Rangers, Hearts and St Mirren. I mean, we should not be going to Livingston and coming away with anything other than 3 points. And I know we dominated the game and all that, but it was a typical Celtic away at Livingston game, and I'd hoped that we'd get over that. And I know, like, we had the 6-0s against Dundee and St Mirren at the start of the season, and, you know, we looked great. And it really looked like we were getting what Ange had said that he was going to deliver, this exciting attacking football. And then, now, this is obviously to do with injuries and players that were available, but the performances went off a cliff. And I don't think they've recovered, to be honest with you. We're going to come on to the Aberdeen game, obviously, but even then, we got the win, but our performance levels were not good. And it's difficult. As I say, there's been a lot of injuries. We've really been unlucky with that, and hopefully our luck's going to change, but that was disappointing for me. And I think that's where we have to measure our progress going forward. We should be going and swatting these teams away. We've done it in the past and not, you know, too long ago, in terms of maybe not Livingston away, but in general, being the dominant force in this league, that's what we need to get back to. Rangers are sadly at that point now where they don't need to perform well, but they're still winning games. They wouldn't go with the mentality of, oh, it's Livingston, we need to change the way we're going to play. I mean, that's what Ange done. He changed the way changed his mentality because it was Livingston away. I mean, that went, that flew in the face of everything he'd talked about before that. And that disappointed me hearing him say that. We were tentative. We went away from our natural game plan. It was meant to be that we don't stop. We don't stop to the end. And yet he bought into this idea that Livingston away is a hard game. And I just don't want to see things like that repeated.
I was out with my father earlier on and we were talking about the transfer window. And we sat, myself and my father sat in the same spot as we did this afternoon when the transfer window closed. And I said to him, this isn't good enough. And his response to me was, what are you talking about? Celtic have brought in 12 players. They've brought in 12 players. You can't, how many more players do you want Celtic to bring in? And I tried to explain to him, I said to him, you know, like, it's not necessarily about the players, that the amount of players you're bringing in, because we lost 11. You know, like, it's about the players that this manager can use and utilise to create something on the pitch that is going to play in the way he wants to play. And then we sat today, and as he was talking, we were talking about Bitton at central midfield, and we were talking about the fact that, you know, the young boy from... what's his name, the left back from Ireland?
Scales.
So, like, we talked about, like, Scales not, you know, playing and stuff like that. And then I turned to him, like, what do you think of the transfer window now? And he's like, ah, yeah, about that. And that's the way it is. And Graham, I think that's probably something that, you know, yourself and, you know, I've spoke to Christian about it, and we've been very, very vocal on the Cynic, and we will continue to be vocal about what we feel is a dereliction of duty from this board in regards to how they back the manager, how they back the football department in general. And essentially, you know, playing near Bitton in 2021 because there's no one else just isn't fucking good enough.
I mean, I think it was Daniel McGowan that said that basically he made a comparison with, like, what Rangers' team would look like if they'd lost the kind of the kind of equivalent player in each position that we'd lost. It basically didn't have for Livingston away. And I mean, I don't think any team would be able to play their best football if they'd lost like six or seven first team players.
Yeah.
So the transfer window, I was listening to the agenda earlier, and Alan made a point about he thinks that Andrew will only get one of his guys, and which, to be honest, I'm completely fine with. I'm completely fine with him, Andrew, only getting to handpick one of his players, because it shouldn't be down to the manager to handpick them. It should be down to the recruitment team. And what I don't want is, I don't want, because we know that there was a kind of large percentage of the players that came in, were neither signed off by Ange or our recruitment team. They were like on a list from Nick Hammond, left in a drawer, or they were just deals done by Dermot Desmond. So whereas I don't want to see Ange making all the signings, I don't want to see anyone that's not in the recruitment team making signings either. It needs to be a combination of the manager's say on the players or the positions that he wants, and it's about the recruitment team finding players using the analysts that we have. That we're trying to get new analysts in. There was a job advertisement for it, so it looks as if we're going down that direction where we were before Don McKay left. And it's about those players, those workers coming up with the best possible players that we can sign for the type of system that we need. That's exactly what we need to be doing going into this transfer window. And if we don't do that, if we give Ange another transfer window like that, another transfer window like Ronnie Dyler's first season, then what's the point in bringing in any manager in? Like, if you brought in Eddie Howe and gave him that transfer window, we're not going to do much with that either. You know what I mean? It's all about getting a manager in that can be supported with the people around the club. And until we have the people around the club supporting the manager, being able to support the manager, then what's the fucking point? Like, we're just not going to go in any direction but down. I know that, I think it was Christian that mentioned it, that the recruitment team put forward a £4 million winger that they really liked. They'd been watching him for a while, scouting him and everything. And they were basically told by the PLC, no, he's too expensive. And then they went and gave a 4-year contract to James McCarthy. So it's just things like that. Get the smart in football people making the smart football decisions, and get Dermot Desmond to fuck.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, the whole point is, you know, like when I started, so as an example, when I started the Cynic, right, I realised that there were certain things I needed, and there were certain things that I couldn't cover on my own. So we started an analytics department. I mean, essentially, we have our own analytics department, which is Christian and Stephen and Aaron. And they do that. Do you know why they do that? Because I can't do that. We've got Claire and we've got Lorenzo and we've got Brian and we've got Aaron as well covering the women's team. Do you know why they do that? Because, I can't do everything. We've got Keith and we've got Lewis Laird and we've got Dave Flanagan and we've got Marcus McLeod doing the press stuff. Do you know why? Because I can't do that. See what you do when you're in that position of being in control of something? You turn around and you say, I can't do everything. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to get some really good people to do the things that I can't do. And if we win the league this season, it will be in spite of the PLC board, not because of the PLC board. And that's what we all really need to start to fucking realise. And we really need to think about what we're doing. Keith, let's move on to the Aberdeen game. What was your thoughts on the game overall? Because we killed the hoodoo, the away game hoodoo that could have went on for another couple of weeks, which would be a nightmare. Your thoughts?
Yeah, it was the first thing that I really noticed was the change in formation. We had the two holding midfielders, the double pivots there with Bittlin playing beside Callum McGregor. Initially, I'm thinking that's really to try and toughen up the midfield a wee bit, because with Scott Brown there in Aberdeen's midfield, you can expect that he's going to make it into a battle, which he always did for us, and he was terrific at it. And I think him and Bittlin going up against each other, Bittlin was marking him at corners. You could see that he was there for the fight. I said a couple of weeks ago when I was last on that I didn't want to see Bittlin in a Celtic shirt ever again, and I'd be happy still not to ever see that, but he did do well against Scott Brown. The rest of the team, it was a surprise, I think, to see so many of the team that put in such an effort on Thursday night starting. But the thing is, we don't have any other players, and that going back to the transfer window and the lack of options that we have. So double pivot was the main takeaway from the starting lineup. We started all right. The goal was a lovely bit of play, a beautiful cross from Turnbull for Kyogo to chest it in. And one of the things that I love about Kyogo, and my wee boy's getting, it's his favourite player, and he's learning all about Celtic, and I keep telling him about past players like Henrik Larsson. And one thing that Larsson used to do was, Larsson scored with every bit of his body. I mean, I'm seeing Neen in against Liverpool. I've seen him using his chest. Every bit of his body he could score with. And Kyogo starting to remind me of that. And I hope I'm not getting too carried away there. Probably am. But he's starting to look like he could be such a difference for us, especially whenever we can create chances for him. What about yourselves? What did you think of the opening period of the match?
Who's in charge here?
Ran out of things to say here, Christopher. I don't know why to get too far ahead of myself, so I thought I'd bat it back to you there.
Who the hell do you think you are, Louis? What was your kind of take? Keith talking about the first goal. What's your take on the first goal? How we started the overall thoughts?
Can I just give you a bit of advice for the hosting point of view? See, when they try and do that, you need to swat them fucking back. Don't take that shit.
Okay. Good, thank you.
Interrupt, fuck it, I'm later. No,
substitute teachers in class, isn't it?
That's it.
Suck, I got
a toilet. It was, I think first half, I felt like we were dominating because Aberdeen were really, really poor, I thought. We did dominate the ball without really, I would say, looking at clinical, like... We created some chances, yes, but we're always going to create chances. We have got better quality than Aberdeen in a lot of positions, maybe not at the back right enough. The Kyogo's goal, I thought, was brilliant. I agree with Keith. I think I've said this to a few people now, but I do feel as if Kyogo has got the kind of Henrik Larsson's about him, in the sense that people expect him to win his games on his own.
Yeah.
And when he was out injured there, people were desperate for him, like we were desperate for Henrik to come back. And it was like, oh, once Henrik comes back, we're all right. And it very much feels that way. I think Kyogo, he did great for that goal. It was intelligent the way he just chested it in and made sure he kind of forced it home. I think he was pretty patchy, to be honest with you, in the game. He missed chances. You know, he's obviously one of these players that is going to miss quite a few, but he'll probably always get one. And listen, we'll take that, you know what I mean? And you've got to remember, he did play a lot of football before he even arrived at us. So he's already, you know, maybe three quarters of the way through a normal season when the rest of the players aren't. So we can take that. But it was, I think overall, it was just, it was a poor performance. I don't think you can say that was a great performance against Aberdeen. We allowed them back into it. We allowed them to grab the initiative second half. We had a massive drop-off in performance. The whole beat-on thing in midfield. I mean, I think someone else mentioned that it was maybe on the reaction. You know, you see beat-on coming back in there and you think, because beat-on's not played there in a while, we think, do you know, maybe Beaton could do a job, you know, maybe that's a system that would work for him, that sort of thing. But every single time you think that about anybody, when you go against your gut instinct and your better judgment, you'll get shown up for it. And you realise quickly, he's never going to capture that form. I mean, I remember when we were doing the Cynic podcast, remember, and he was my favourite player, and he was brilliant at that time. I mean, when he first came to the club and played in the centre of the midfield, he really, really was impressive for a period of time near Beaton. But things changed. Things really did change for him. But he's been here a long time as well. But we can maybe come on to the kind of downside of the game later. But overall, I was left frustrated. However, we got the result, and that's all I asked for going in. Win, hook or by crook, whatever we need to do. But I must say, I was going fucking tonto until we scored that goal.
Graham McKay.
I think I agree with Alan in that he's probably my favoured choice in that defensive midfield position at the moment, but it's just because it's different shades of shite. The thing about Beaton is he's almost at a testimonial, so maybe we can play the Israeli national team or something at Celtic Park.
Jesus Christ.
but no, one bonus I said to someone before the game started was we are a very small team at the moment, especially including our centre-backs. So I was actually thinking to myself, it's good to get Beaton in just for a wee bit of height, and he nearly scored early on with that header. So I think he will be, if he's getting a run of games, it will be kind of bonus having him in for his height. And before the game, I was thinking to myself, most of the time that Beaton played as a centre-mid for us, it was in a four-man midfield, like two centre-mids. I thought, well, maybe if he's got three people in the centre-mid, it'll be easier for him and he'll have a good game. But nah, that was a lot of shite. So, yeah. But early on, I was watching the game on my cracked phone at an 80th birthday party. And early on, I thought, the first 20 minutes, I thought we looked pretty electric. I thought we were creating chance after chance. We were getting a lot of corners. And then the second half of the first half, we just started to slip away and kind of like stand off a bit, slow down a little bit, and just didn't seem to have that kind of fire in us anymore. And it just kind of continued like that for the rest of the game.
I really do think that Sunday was all about winning. It really, really didn't matter how we played. It didn't matter how we performed. It didn't matter, you know, what the platform was. It didn't really matter who scored. It didn't matter if it was a, you know, own goal in the first minute or the 96th, as long as we won, and we did. And I really do think that's the key point to take away. We've got a few questions, and all the questions are basically based around... I'll read out Paul Curran's at PaulCar88. I probably already know the answer, but do you think there are any players from other positions who could play in midfield for a short period to allow Ange to rotate Turnbull and Rogic? No. Well, Louis, we'll bring you in.
Yeah, so I was thinking about this. Just trying to think like outside the box about players.
Oh, here we go. Here we go. Strap yourselves in.
Aye, well, two of them I was thinking about just playing deeper. One would be Tam. Now, Tam doesn't have the pace, obviously, to kind of cover the same area that you really need, and that's the big drawback. But as someone who is so good at, he's like a metronome in the number 10. Like when he's playing there and he's got the right people beside him, we've seen it in the past, he's the one that's linking the play, constantly moving it about and trying to create things and all that. A deep lying playmaker, could he be that type of player to do that from a deeper position, allowing maybe Cal McGregor to go further forward? I don't know. The other one was David Turnbull, who we've spoke about the fact that he's not really got the energy to be a number 8. I don't think he's got the composure really to be a number 10. Could he be a 6?
No, absolutely not.
No, but at this point, it's
depressing. It's depressing as fuck what's happening.
It's depressing as fuck, but these are the things that we're in a shitty position that we're going to have to think outside, or we have had to, and we've got to come up with something, because we've got now until January, which is going to be a mental busy time, and we don't have enough players.
But what you're doing,
we might have to try square pegs and round holes.
But what you're doing, Louis, is you are basically just shuffling the same three players around.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, ultimately, Keith, what's your take on that? I mean, there doesn't, you know, we've mentioned, obviously, in that 6, you've had Callum McGregor, of course. You've had Ismael Asoro. You've had James McCarthy. You've had Nir Bitton. There's really only one in the system that we want to play and how Ange Postecoglou wants to play that really fits it. Is there hope for any of the other ones?
No, that I can really think of. And just going about the Louis was saying there about Tom Rogic as the metronome. The only real metronome in that team is Cal McGregor. And the way that he links the player, the pace that he does, and the ability that he has to go past players whenever needs to be, he's the outstanding candidate for that position. I think we'd all hoped and prayed that James McCarthy was going to do that. So you don't know if James McCarthy just isn't settling. Maybe after this wee break that he'll have a wee bit of time to reflect and get comfortable, move into his new house, whatever he has to do to get himself happy and fit. And maybe he'll come back a totally different player. I liked what Martin had said in the agenda, which you can get if you join thecynic.co. Where he
I love it. I get back in the fucking host get fixed.
I'm coming for your job, boy. he'd thought the same about Shane Duffy last season, and I think we've been burned with that before. We all want McCarthy to do well, but he's shown very little since he's come on, since he's joined the team. Any other players that I can think midfield, I'd mentioned Ewan Henderson a couple of weeks ago, but we've still not seen any sign of him whatsoever. He's out of the picture. He's gone. I was even having a wee look in transfer market there to see if there was any ideas for free agents, and there's nothing. There's nothing there at all.
Jack Wilshere.
Jackie boy.
Jack Rodwell.
Big Rodders. He was on like 70 grand a week when he was at Sunderland. Like 70 grand a week when they were in League One. So
incredible.
The only player that jumps out to me that could possibly fit in that position would be Juranovic. But then you've got Ralston at right back again. So
But see that what you're all doing is very admirable. It genuinely is trying to kind of figure stuff out in terms of, you know, Louis talking about Rogic and, you know, Turnbull reading the game, and you're talking there, Graham, about Juranovic and even the idea of Henderson. That's all admirable. It's not good enough. None of it's good enough. I mean,
shouldn't have to be doing that.
It shouldn't have. I mean, we talked about, and again, on the agenda, we kind of talk about, you know, we talk about different things, but like we were talking on Monday about the midfield situation as we're doing currently. My fear would be that the board turn around and say, Scott Robertson's back. Yay, he's done so well. He's your number 6 now. He's like a new signing. Just bring him back now. Just bring him back now. Because do you know what? See Scott Robertson, we're shuffling the cards. We're putting in McCarthy 1 week. We're putting in Soro the next week. We're putting in Bitton the next week. Honestly, see the next home game, stick Robertson in and see if he plays well. Ah, fuck it, why not? That's literally where we are. We're literally pull back a 19-year-old who's had hardly any fucking first team experience, but actually I'd rather him than McCarthy or Soro or fucking Beaton.
I mean, McCarthy, Soro, Beaton, Rogic, Turnbull, I would say all of them are good enough, and I wouldn't want any of them in my Celtic team next season, this time next season. If any of them are in the midfield for Celtic this time next season, the game's a fucking bogey. And some of them are doing a job by now, like Turnbull do a job, you know. Sam has played well considering where he was. You know, he only just got back for the World Cup. He's managed to do a job. But yeah, right. We shouldn't be in this position. None of them are fit for purpose, as far as I'm concerned. But we are where we are. And you did ask a question about, you know, can we move anybody? I don't know. We all have a certain level of knowledge about football, but none of us are trained in it. We don't see all the training sessions. We don't know the intricacies of these things. I'm talking about Turnbull playing there or Tamplin. Maybe it's just completely not even possible. But we're not the ones in the position to think about these things. That's Ange's job. And the Scott Robertson thing, I agree with you. I'd go and get him the now. But why the fuck was he allowed to leave? He should never have been allowed to leave.
Well, the only thing that makes me think that he was allowed to leave is because we looked at him and we thought that Soro or McCarthy were better choices. I mean, that's the only rational way to look at it. Like,
he left before the window closed.
So he left before...
Yeah. So he left before the window closed. Huh. So maybe they thought they were going to get someone else in.
I'm
just going to say, I'm quite happy for Robertson to be away for this season. I think one of the best things that ever happened to Callum McGregor was when he left to go down south for that season, away from the pressures of being at Celtic and playing games regularly. And I think that's what's going to happen with Robertson. If he comes back up here with the state the team's in such a state of flux, if he has a couple of bad games, people are going to absolutely pounce on him.
Didn't that happen with Callum McGregor, though? When he came back, remember he started well under Ronnie. But that's part of the learning curve. That's part of the learning curve of being a Celtic midfielder. You're going to have bad games, and it's how you bounce back from it. I actually think
is going to be the big thing for him. McGregor sat out for a while, but he'd already had those games in his legs. He's got that experience. I think that's going to do Robertson more benefit down south just now than coming up here, because he's going to get under the microscope here. He'd get slated, even though he's one of the younger players. Would be calling for Beaton to come back in, and that's not going to do him any good. We're seeing it with Welsh. The best thing that could be happening to Welsh, I'm not totally convinced by Starfelt. I think if Welsh was playing these games, we might struggle, just like we have been doing there. We might win them, we might maybe draw in some games, but the experience that this is going to give Welsh for the years to come, he might not have a massive high ceiling, but he might be an excellent squad player. And we need players like that are going to have that experience, and that are going to do is that are going to stay with us for the next 5-6 years. Somebody like Welsh.
I don't think Welsh has got it personally. I just personally think that if Welsh was good enough, he'd be playing. Because see, Starfelt's a guy who's going through. You know, he takes a lot of criticism, some rightly, some wrongly. People, you know, there's a bias where people maybe look at him. He can play a decent game now, have one mistake or one kind of thing, and people will go, oh, there's the bomb scare again. I don't necessarily think it's that simple, but if Stephen Welsh was good enough, he'd be playing. That's what I like. And we're going to talk about Ange Postecoglou as a guy and what we think of him kind of so far in his management style. And this brings back to my point that Lou was talking about, you know, we don't see the games every day, right? We don't see the players. We don't see the training. That's true. But what we can see is you can read between the lines. So Ange comes in, we announce Urigide, Shaw's announced. Those two guys, and I said this to my father today, they will never play for Celtic. Like they will just not play for Celtic. They're part of the 12 that were brought in as part of our signings. None of them will play. And if they do, great. But I can't see it. Ange has seen them and he's thought, these guys just aren't good enough. He's talked about scale. At the weekend, he talked about scales and he talked about he's not quite ready yet. That to me is like, what does he need? What more does he need to do to get ready? He's been in for 3 weeks. He's fully fit. He's played it. What I like about Ange Postecoglou is he won't play players that I don't think he trusts. What's your thoughts on that, Graham McKay?
That's kind of what I was going to say about Welsh and stuff. I felt like he's obviously, Andrew's shown over the last few weeks that he's not scared of not playing someone that he's bought.
Yeah.
I mean, McCarthy, nowhere near it, the boys you just spoke about. So I would, if Welsh was doing things in training that Andrew was impressed by, there's no way Andrew's not going to put him in the team. It's because Ange is desperate for wins at the moment. So it's Starfelt is obviously showing something. And I'm kind of in agreement with the fact that I think feels if Starfelt's getting better. I think a lot of our problems recently in the last couple of games have not been anything to do with the central defence. I think the central defence is starting to look a wee bit stronger as far as I'm concerned. But the kind of worst indictment, the saddest indictment of this first team that went up to Aberdeen is I can only think about four players that I wouldn't want to upgrade. And I'm not talking about upgrading in the way that a team gets upgraded over years if you're improving. I'm talking about within the next fucking 6 months. I don't want to see Montgomery in the first team. I don't want to see Ralston in the first team. I don't want to see Turnbull, Rogic in the first team. Like, it's just, there's a B-turn, of course, and I wouldn't want Abada in the first team. So it's for me, we're running on empty, and this is probably the worst first team that I can remember. I think I've mentioned that before. And we quickly need to improve on them. I know there's players to come back from injury. We've got two fullbacks coming back that will be probably our first choice. But even then, I'd probably improve in one of them. I'm not going to say who. But yeah.
I feel the same.
That's as far as I'm concerned. It's just, I always say it's about the manager kind of sculpting the players. But I meant that with players that are kind of similar level. I didn't expect us to be having to play 18-year-old left-wingers at left-back. It's just, it's a sad indictment of the first-team squad.
Louis, you wanted to come in?
Yeah, no, I was just going to say on the notion that Angel, you know, it being a good thing that he doesn't just play players. Also, to counter that a wee bit, I think you need to give players an opportunity. But we've seen and wasted a hell of a lot of money in recent years, and we've seen players come and go very quickly and not really have a chance to choose what they can do. I think the likes of, you know, Liam Scales, Liam Shaw, Urigidi, I just hope that, you know, because you can say that managers have their favourites and they only pick their favourites and they don't deviate from it. Then you can say that, well, Ange won't just play the players for the sake of it. He's, you know, he only will play players that he trusts and things like that. It depends on how you look at these things. I just think we can't write people off. See, when the squad is so thin as it is, I'd be really disappointed if we had brought players in the summer there and we never see them play for Celtic again. Because at the end of the day, there had to be a reason why they were brought in. And fair enough, the manager maybe wouldn't have signed them. But surely Ange, being the type of guy that he is, and the philosophy that he's got and all that sort of stuff, he should be able to make players better and hopefully polish up some of the turds that we've got and make them players that we can at least get a few games out of when we really need them. Like somebody like Scales. Scales should be playing for me instead of Montgomery. And Montgomery, if Montgomery is a winger, he should be playing as a winger. He's came in, he's done a job, great. But see, after this international break, we need to play left-backs at left-back. And Liam Scales deserves the games that Montgomery has got to show us whether he's got it or not. And see if he's played a handful of games and he's been really woeful, then fair enough. But get some sort of an understanding of these players' level before we just chuck them in the bin.
I'll bring Keith in a second, but, you know, on the Urigidi and Liam Shaw, you know, Lewis Laird, our good friend, doing fantastic work, as mentioned. We had a Scottish, it was a League Cup game or a Scottish Cup game or something again, and with the B team, a Challenge Cup it would have been. And Liam Scales and Urigidi, not Liam Scales, sorry. Yeah, Liam Shaw and Urigidi played in that game. And they didn't stand out.
I think you said Urigidi was at fault for both of the Morton goals.
You know, this is I know what you're saying, Louis. I really do. But I also think that, I just think maybe these guys are, utilise the squad, but at the same time, if he keeps coming back to these players and play, so for example, when everyone, you know, when we were having players on, not rate, he's playing Juranovic over every other left back. Juranovic is your second choice left back. So you get Greg Taylor, you've got Juranovic, then you've got, what do you call him, Montgomery, then you've got Scales. You know, Juranovic is a right back. You know what I mean? The right back is ahead of all of the other left backs.
See the Bolly thing. I don't know if you guys have seen these conspiracy theories about Ange playing Bolly and then getting told, no, you're no fucking playing him again. And that's why we've never seen him again, because everything that happened. But what the fuck was that all about? Why did Bolly come out of the blue play? He played okay. Like, Bolly should be in there again, instead of Montgomery. Why has he just disappeared off the face of the earth again? Like that just seems... That's inconsistent. Like, that's weird, is it not?
Keith, I'm going to ask you the question. What has happened to Bolly? And I want a confirmed answer. Go.
Bolly was last seen heading to Magaluf on an EasyJet flight last Friday night. It's unconfirmed. It's unsubstantiated. It could be utterly fabricated. But I think he's going to be a rep there for the end of the summer.
Him and John Terry, probably. I just assumed John Terry was just an Ibiza rep.
One thing I'm not totally getting on board with is the being so down in Montgomery. Ange seems to like him. And it might be just because he doesn't have any other options there. But he played them for the full match on Thursday night, and then he brought him back in for a really important match up at Pittodrie. So there's things about Montgomery, even playing at left back as a left winger, that he likes. And I've got to say, there is faults in his game, but he was the one that created the goal. He was the one that created the winner Tam created it. He's the one that set up the goal on Sunday there. There's lots to like about Montgomery, with his pace, with his running, but he's still young, and we've got to keep that in mind, that he is still learning his game. We hadn't heard of him last season. He wasn't really one of the names that we thought he's going to be the next big thing. He's came out the blue, and he's put in really, really decent performances. Not great, not outstanding. I thought for their goal, he looked as if he ducked out of the way for the header. But he made up for it when he kept going forward and hit up that goal for Jota.
I think it was just mistimed. I think he just jumps too early. I don't think he ducks out. I think he just jumps too early.
It didn't look, but it didn't look as if there was extra straining to try and get higher. It was as if he was just holding, waiting, and maybe Hart either clearing him out or getting a big fist out or something like that. It's a minimal thing. It was a freak goal. It hit off the guy's shoulder and neck and just looked over his head.
I'm pro Montgomery as well, but at the same time, I would like a left back in there. And I know he is, you know, we were talking about it on the agenda, you know, Alan Edgar's convinced that he probably is a left back and that's his position. You know, we'll see where we are in a couple of years down the line. But for me, I want a left back the thing I wanted about this back four, our back four, our back five was just experience. And you know, you've got a guy like Tony Ralston, who this is his first consistent season at Celtic, and I think he's flailing a little bit. You've got Starfelt, who's new in the door. You've got Carter Vickers, who's new in the door. Joe Hart's got a lot of experience, but you know, again, I think he's performed well. And then we've got a left back. The thing about Montgomery is, you know, as soon as someone else is fit, he'll be out of the team. So he knows that. You know, he knows he's not the first choice. Consistency in the back line was the big thing I wanted this season, and it's the thing we've had least, I think. Graham, talk to me about Jota.
Oh, he's a beautiful, beautiful boy. What a fine head of hair. And I love the wee thing he does. I don't know the name of the move, where he kind of like he receives the ball and then flicks it and goes the other way. Kind of like you see Ronaldo doing it quite a lot. It's just beautiful to watch. Ange has shown how much trust he's got in him, that instead of subbing off the left winger to put on a new left winger to shuffle about, he brought off the right winger and moved Jota to the right wing. I think he just knows he's a match winner. He's got a fantastic shot in him. And he's one that I would be tempted. I know, I think I've seen online that it was 6.4 million or something we would need to pay for him. I mean, I wouldn't be so silly as to pay for him now, because you never know, somebody's form can just fall off a cliff.
John Joe Kenny.
Yeah, exactly. So I would be definitely looking at it towards the end of the season to getting him in permanently, because he's been a breath of fresh air. And the way he spoke after the game against Aberdeen, talking about his family being up and everything like that, he's the type of player that Celtic fans will just buy into instantly, because he's got that end product. He gets bums off seats and he just seems to be really, really happy to be playing for Celtic at the moment. So I love him.
So the game finished 2-1. We scored late on. We conceded a goal, a calamitous goal. I'm sure you're all aware of it now. A very calamitous goal where, you know, whose fault was it? Was it the goalkeepers? Was it the left backs? Was it Bitton's? Was it everybody's? Probably a little bit of blame to go around. Everybody. Joe Hart made a couple of good saves in the game, kept us in it. But ultimately, you know, Celtic get the away day hoodoo off the back. We don't have to worry about that moving forward. But Louis McCaffrey, the next game's Motherwell away at Fir Park. Motherwell are going pretty good guns. What's your fears of that game?
I think the fear is, I mean, other than the obvious, you know, we don't take all 3 points. I think we're all waiting for this team to click into gear.
Yeah.
And my big fear is we come back out of another international break and we struggle again. I think how you come out of the international break kind of sets the tone for the next period of games, and we need to come out against Motherwell, as you say, and you've said on many pods recently about how much of a challenge it's going to be, and I totally agree. I think it really is going to be a tough game for us, but in a way it's probably a good game, because it would allow us to, one, hammer home the fact that we can win away, and we can overcome a wee bit of a challenge, a wee bit of adversity. I'd probably rather that than maybe being at home against like a St Mirren or something like that. We are going to have to rise to the occasion to win this game, and I think that's a good thing. But yeah, I mean, we've got Motherwell away, St Johnstone at home, Hibernian away, Hibs, they're also known as. We've got Livingston at home and Dundee away before the next break. If we can do this, the away games obviously are going to be the difficult ones, you know, going away to Easter Road. But I think the Motherwell game will be all important. But hopefully we have some players back as well, you know. But again, it's just this way where that last block of games, I felt like we were struggling to keep our head above the water. We were really fighting against things, just trying to stay alive. I don't want to feel like that this time. I want to feel like, you know, things are all right and we can start building something, because I think even Ange's style of play and all that, everything he's trying to implement went on the back burner during those games, because it was just about survival. It was just about getting points and results. And that's not a nice feeling. It's not a nice feeling to going through games just, we just need to win. I want performances back as well as results.
Graham?
I think, just touching on what Louis said there, I think I've never looked forward to an international break as much as I've looked forward to this one, just because it takes 2 weeks off everyone's injuries. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
2 weeks closer. Just the way that Louis spoke there about the next games coming up, Motherwell and Hibs away from home would give us definitely the hardest six away ties. We have played the hardest six away ties after that point. And Rangers definitely haven't. I mean, Rangers have been away to what, fucking Ross County, St Johnstone, I think. So what's quite good about the SPFL this season is it's very different from last season. Rangers basically marched to the title with no one even attempting to lay a glove on them. Not because Rangers were particularly special, but every other team in Scotland just seemed to have an absolutely shite year. And I think with the crowds coming back and obviously a lot of the clubs have improved. Hearts obviously weren't there last season, one of the best teams in the league so far. Hibs doing much better than they did last season. Motherwell doing a lot better. Aberdeen probably a bit the same as they were last season. So it's, we will drop points at some of these places, but I've got a confidence this season that these teams are also going to take points off of Rangers. So I don't think, I think it's going to be interesting over the next kind of month and a half towards getting towards Christmas, just to see how many points are dropped by both us and them, because I don't think it's going to be a case of us getting beat or drawn and them just marching on to the title. I'm hopeful of that anyway.
Keith, your kind of thoughts on the kind of fixtures coming up? Motherwell away, finish Faros at home at 3 o'clock or half three, terrific.
Yep.
St Johnstone at home, Hibs away, and then obviously Livingston at home as well. What's your kind of take?
I think the biggest thing that's going to be there is momentum. That Motherwell game could be a season-defining game. The momentum that we could get from that, going into the Ferencváros game at the ridiculous o'clock on the Tuesday, two wins there, going on to St Johnstone, another hard game at Celtic Park on the Saturday, and then going to Easter Road to play Hibs midweek. If we go into that with three wins and starting to score a couple of goals and starting to look like Angie's philosophies is getting put into practice, then that could be massive. If we go to Hibs and we win there, then we take on Livingston, chance for retribution. This is the whole point of this part of the season is getting momentum. And like you said, that game against Aberdeen and getting the win and the good feeling going into this 11 days until the next Celtic game this break, then that's what we really needed. And there's a bit more belief about the team now. We can go to Fir Park, who are a really, really difficult side. I watched the highlights against
Hearts. They're called Motherwell, not Fir Park.
Sorry, I've gone to Fir Park.
Motherwell.
But they're a decent side, and they seem to be quite intent in attacking. I couldn't find their XG or anything like that, but Hearts won the game with 10 shots on goal, with Motherwell having 20. I'll defer to the stats guys to find out what their actual XG was in the match, but the fact that they're peppering goals, they are, might be a bit Lennon-esque, but they are actually going in the front foot. And with Motherwell, that wasn't always the case. They were quite a dogged team. They would take their chances in the break. I'm looking forward to going to see Celtic play there and a beating Saturday.
That makes one of us. Louis?
Yeah, but I was just going to say, just as Keith was talking about that there, I was thinking one thing I'd really like to see from Celtic sooner rather than later is a bit of a change in mentality. I'd like to see us turn up at Motherwell with the bit between our teeth. I want to see a determination, a desire to, and a bit of a confidence to go, we're turning up today, we're going to win, we're going to battle you today. I'm a bit sick of, I look at Celtic and I think they look a bit weak. I thought they looked weak at the weekend against Aberdeen. I just don't get the energy of a team that are turning up and ready to just dominate and smash whoever is in front of them. And I think kind of mental attitude to these things is important. I think it can carry you a certain way. That kind of winning mentality, the mental aspect of the game, I think is something that obviously Ange is going to have to work at. He's going to have to instill that in the team. And that's not going to just happen overnight, of course not. But it's something I would like to see a wee bit more of. So that we're turning up to the likes of Motherwell or Livingston or whoever and going, it does not matter what you're going to do here today. We're taking these 3 points. We're going to fucking play our game. We're going to beat you. I just think we look a bit weak.
Graham?
So just to touch on what Keith was saying about XG there, the analysis team of Stephen Russell, I think it does the expected points table. And this is something that he gets roundly mocked for on Twitter from Rangers fans every time they post it. But looking at the kind of XG for and against for Motherwell, they're actually massively overperforming at the moment. They've got 14 points in the league, but based on the chances they're getting, the chances they're taking and the chances they're actually getting or defending against, they should only have 7.9 points. So they're actually almost double what they should be based on the expected goals. And if that's the kind of thing that interests you, then again, on cynic.co for all your stats needs.
Listen, the cynic.q, we are a broad church. We have a bunch of nerds in a cupboard doing fantastic stuff that you honestly... we're recording, you know, one thing I will say, we're recording a podcast later on called Lost in the Half Space, which is all about people who don't know about stats and don't know about how they work. And it's about explaining it in a way that is, you can understand it. It's fantastic. That's the sort of stuff we have. We also have a fantastic podcast called Alas, Sirmani and McCaffrey, where Louis and Sirmani talk about beer and boxing and UFC. And it's terrific and everyone loves it. Listen, we're at our time. This has been fantastic. I've had an absolute ball hosting, first time in a couple of years. Listen on, we've got Lewis Laird today attended the press conference for the B team. He spoke to Tommy McIntyre. That's going to come up straight after the podcast finishes. This part of the podcast finishes, so just keep on listening. And Celtic B team are playing Spartans tomorrow. Lewis will be there and he'll do a report, which will be on the agenda next week. But check out the press conference. It's on as we finish. But Louis McCaffrey, this has been, it's been an honour and a privilege to sit in your chair, sir.
Listen, the chair's yours. I've thoroughly enjoyed being a guest again. It's been
Jesus
brilliant.
Christ.
see you next week, Chris. No, it was great. Really enjoyed it. And thanks to Keith and Graham for the banter, you know. It's all about the banter.
The banter. Keith, you're looking terrific. You're in great shape. And we've enjoyed having you on.
Been good. Really enjoyed that. Question for you, though. Do you like Jota's hair? It's just too funky for me.
It rips my tits, man.
I've got plenty of comments, but you know, we'll hold that for another time. But good spy, Keith. Graham McKay, all the way from Bamberg in Germany. It's been a pleasure.
It's been great. I've had a great time. But just talking about hair, Keith, you know that the lockdown's over and you can go to the hairdressers again.
Right. I'm going full into this quarter life. No, this is going into midlife crisis now.
Yeah, what a life. You're not gonna last that long.
We're all getting old.
I keep playing like I did last night. No,
this has been fantastic. I've really enjoyed it. This has been the Cynic Weekly. I'm your host, Chris Gallagher, and we'll speak to you down the road.
Hi, Tommy, Lewis from the Cynic.co. How you doing?
Hi, Lewis. Good morning to you.
Of course, Friday night's loss would have been a disappointment to you and your squad. How much can they learn from that game and for the first time, losing for the first time since the opening day of the season?
Yeah, no, obviously it's always hurtful when you lose a game, particularly here. There's real onus is to win. However, there's also the bigger picture of, you know, that development the players get. And you know, as much as it's a disappointment, it's a real, sometimes it's a kind of eye-opener and you players take realisation of where they are. And that's what we look for. That's the whole purpose, being involved in this league. That'll not always be the way you want it to go. How do you then react to setbacks? How they recover from it? Do we then see a difference in the next game? So, yeah, there's so much to learn there. And as I say, that's the reason why we've come into this league.
You slightly touched on it, but is it sometimes that players might learn more from a game like this against an experienced opposition?
Yeah, sometimes you're like that as a coach as well. You know, you kind of look at your players and you'll never ever get it your own way, and there'll be a time where things don't go for you. You know, there's key moments in the game. You know, if we score the penalty, then that can be a difference. We've had a couple of chances in the first half, and albeit he still did really well, they caused us some problems. They deserve to win the game. and that's something that, you learn to live with, but as I say, you're not winning every game, but it's important that you do learn. And as you say, there are times where sometimes you learn more about your players in adversity, and we'll certainly, and the players themselves would be the first to admit that.
You've mentioned a few times the momentum your side's picked up in recent weeks. Do you think not having a game for an extended period of time played a part in Friday night?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't use it as an excuse, but yeah, you get that momentum. It's a good habit when you get in a winning way and the players just kind of roll from game to game. So there was a big gap up until the game on Friday. But again, I don't use that as an excuse. But yeah, you can have the momentum where
you're winning week in, week out, and it breeds a lot of confidence within your squad. And then to get that kind of stoppage and then having to prepare them. But again, I don't use an excuse, but it is something that if we can get, then it's really important we get that.
That being said, obviously you did have that break. Was it good to get working with them in the training ground with how busy they've been over the course of the season so far?
Sorry, I missed that question.
They've obviously had a busy schedule so far this season. Was it good to actually get that time in the training ground though to work with the boys?
Yeah, but sometimes it's too much. Sometimes you get too long that period of time. But there's also positives in that. We've had one or two players been up training with the first team. They get that experience, which is really important as well. So as much as it doesn't always run smoothly for you, you get the opportunity to bed some stuff in the training ground. Correct, you're right what you say. But there's also the opportunity one or two players been up training with the first team.
Friday was also the first game of the season. I think your squad hasn't scored a goal in. How happy have you been with the side going forward in the campaign? And was Friday night possibly just one of those games that just didn't click?
Yeah, it's not just about one game. I think we've been really pleased the way the players have adjusted to life, playing against men. And at times, there's been some really good performances against us, but at the same time, we've churned out a lot of good performances. With young players beginning to learn in terms of the methodology, the way that we want to try and play, the way that we try and take the examples from the first team. They are a great example for us, and they're still learning, and that's the whole idea of it, is just, as I say, take them out of their comfort zone, get good performances, and then the better performances you get, then you generally get wins. But it's not about always winning, but yeah, we do like to win, but it's also about the development, and we're certainly learning a lot this season.
You have a chance to bounce back with two home games this week as well. How much of the squad relishing getting back out there and getting back to winning ways?
Yeah, it's a wee bit different now. The fact that we've got, it's international week as well, so we'll lose. I think we've got 8 players who'll be away. But it doesn't really faze me that, because it gives you the chance to bring some other younger players in from the academy. There'll be a couple of young ones who'll play on Wednesday. There'll be one or two players who have deservedly deserved, they'll get their chance on Wednesday as well, and it's up to them to show that they take that chance, and it's up to the other ones to put pressure on the ones that are away on international duty.
How good is it for you to see your players go out on international duty, and what can they gain from that sort of experience as well?
Yeah, I mean, in all my time here, we've always had the top-end players going in international, represent their country. It's really important. Again, it's a big part of development. They're well looked after. They like to represent their country. There are numerous countries out there that they are. So they're far and wide, the players go, and we just hope they come back fit. But again, it's a fantastic accolade for the club, and it's testimony to how well we're doing in terms of developing players, the number of players that are away international duty.
You just mentioned again about having the chance to bring younger players in. Is that something you are looking forward to seeing, with more younger players getting a chance in the side?
Yeah, sometimes it's kind of forced upon you. Sometimes you need to, but I have no reservations about any young players coming in. There's a lot of good coaching goes on down in the academy. We all work together. The main purpose is to try and develop players for the first team. And then the next step, if they get into the B team, then so well and good. That's the most important thing. They come in, they get their chance, and we know they're young. We know they'll be raw. We know they'll make mistakes, but at the end of the day, that's one of the learning processes of becoming a good footballer, learning by your mistakes.
Over the past year, I've seen some coverage for even younger players like Daniel Kelly and Ben Doak with his goal for Scotland as well. Is there a plan in place for these players when they turn 16 to be introduced into the B-side setup, and these regular conversations, as you say, going on between yourself and the other age group coaches?
Yeah, there's a great deal of continuity going on, and of course there's a long-term plan for young players. Ultimately, if they're good enough, then they'll get pushed up. But sometimes they take that wee bit extra time. Not everyone's the same. It's a different journey for everyone. They'll really surprise you. They'll just kind of escalate into the B team, and then they might taper off a little bit. So you need to understand how young they are. You need to look at the processes of how they're developing. You need to be careful with them. But there'll always be that clear pathway that they see through, because it's important that these players see that. And if they're doing well for younger age groups, then we'll parachute them into the B team if they're good enough. The other thing is, it is kind of age-specific as well. So once they get to 16, as I said, their bread and butter will be playing with under-18s or under-17s. And there's a little kind of carrot there for them that if the opportunity exists, then I have no hesitations about bringing them into the B team.
In the past 2 weeks, we've both seen Luke O'Connell and Scott Robertson score their first goals of the season as well. As players you've worked with this campaign, how good is it to see them go out and make an impact elsewhere in leagues such as English and Scottish League One?
Yeah, they're two top talented young players. Worked a lot with them. It doesn't surprise me at all that they've been out and done well. Both left footers as well, both similar positions. And both, you know, deserve everything they get because they're great kids. They work really hard at training, and every accolade they get, they should, you know, greatly receive from them.
Cheers, Tommy. Best luck tomorrow night.
No, thanks very much. Cheers.
Okay, Lewis. Thanks, Colin.
Hey, Tommy. How's it going?
Good. Good. Thanks.
So obviously, this is the second game in a sort of three-game week spell. You're playing three games in 8 days. With a sort of smallish squad that you've been using, you're speaking about bringing some of the youngsters in, but how important is it to try and keep the guys free from injury during that time? And how hard is that when you're kind of balancing that alongside trying to introduce some of the sort of things that you've picked up from the previous games so that you've got that ahead of the next game? It's a lot to fit in such a small schedule, isn't it?
No, it is, but I've been on the other side of it where there was lockdown and we never had any games. So, you know, it's that type of thing where, yeah, we take it every day of the week because the players want to play games. We look after them. We've got a great kind of backroom staff that can prepare them. So there's not really any issues about them handling the games because that's something, if they go up to the first team, it's a regular basis with the first team. So they need to be able to be resilient to know that they can handle that. We'll look after them physically, mentally, in the training ground, in terms of they eat well. So everything's kind of geared to make sure they recover after each game. Yeah, it is a tight squad. We understand that as well, but it makes my life a little bit easier. And it's good for them because they get the opportunity to play.
When you speak about that tight squad, is that something that you'd prefer so that you've got the chance to sort of work one-on-one with each of the guys instead of having a bigger squad where players float in and out of it?
No, we always work one-on-one in players. There's that's part of the process of developing individuals. It's not just about solely developing the team. It's about developing units of the team. It's about then stripping it back and working with individuals, whether it's video analysis or it's on the pitch that we do or it's in the gym. So there's always that individual development, which is so important. It really is. And yeah, we whether we've got small squads, big squads, then, as I say, we are posting the same length of time to every individual.
When we were speaking at the start of the season, we were speaking about what the goals would be for this campaign, and you said that it wasn't so much about getting the wins, it was about the player development. Now, when you've looked at being 10 games into the season, have you players starting to reach the development that you'd hoped they would reach by this point, or are they ahead of schedule? Where do you think they kind of are in that the plan that you'd laid out?
Well, that's a big question. I think there are some young players who have come in and they've excelled. They have been exceptional. They've been exciting. And that's the bit of the job that we really like, that you see a difference in players. They've been tested. They've come out of their comfort zone. It's not been easy for them. They've had to deal with setbacks. So I would say that we're ahead in terms of we're going the right direction. Maybe we want to kind of get there. You can see a difference on the pitch and how they play. So compared to the first game, compared to now, you can see a big difference. You can see what's happening in the training ground has started to be implemented onto the pitch as well. So we are moving. Yeah, you get a couple of setbacks, you get injuries, you deal with that. That's part and parcel with football. As I say, you just go on with it. And I always think that there's always young players. It's a fantastic academy at Celtic. And it's important that people understand that if their spaces, I don't, for me, it doesn't matter what age they are. Albeit as long as they're over 16 in this, but for me it's about giving them opportunity, and that's a big thing, and I'm sure they're the same. They just want an opportunity to show what they can do.
When the senior season ticket came out, there was talks about the B team getting the chance to maybe play at Celtic Park. Has there been any more discussions on if you'll get the chance to do that this season?
No, I haven't heard anything, but I'm sure if that's the case, then that will happen. You know, we have done it in the past and it's exciting. You know, we've played in cup finals. And I remember we played in the Glasgow Cup final. We beat Rangers 3-2 and last minute goal with Robbie Deas. And the whole concept of players being at Celtic Park and playing at Celtic Park, again, is part of their development. And yes, if it can happen, then they'll make it happen. No problem at all with that.
And just finally on the development, the season as a whole is sort of almost halfway through, although Celtic have still got a couple of games to catch up with. already the thoughts must be going ahead to next season. And if you were given the choice yourself, would you rather that the B team had another season in the Lowland League, or do you think there's a plan to sort of restructure the old reserve league going forward? And what would you prefer to do as the Celtic B team manager next year?
All I can say, I think it's been a success so far. I think it's something that I've been crying out for a long time. Even my time with the Scottish AFA, when I was working there, there was always a plan of how we can further develop our young players, particularly the group underneath the first team. I think it's probably been successful just now in terms of us playing in that the Lowland League. And whatever way it goes, I think it has shown that there's a place for a Colt team in a division to develop young players and bridge a gap.
Yeah, I agree with you, and all the best for tomorrow night and ahead for the weekend as well.
Brilliant. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Tommy.
Cheers.